Hey, everybody, thanks for tuning in to the Comedy at the Carlson Cafe. I want to say thanks to our great friends. How about Chef Joe over at Sapori Cafe and Catering? They're located inside of the Powers Building Atrium downtown and have the best lunch specials you're going to find in Rochester. And to top it off, they could cater your very own special event. Visit at Sapori Rochester on Instagram and find them on Facebook for more information. You could also check out our good friends over at Three Heads Brewing. Jeff and the boys over there make the finest beers you're going to find this side of the Genesee River. And they also have an amazing, amazing brewery with live music just about every night of the week. Check out threeheadsbrewing.com for more information there. And we also want to say thanks to our friends at Iron Smoke Whiskey. Always remember to drink responsibly, but they make delicious stuff. They make Rattlesnake Rosie's Apple Pie Whiskey and a traditional Applewood Smoked Whiskey. Visit ironsmokewhiskey.com or you can visit their tasting room on Parse Avenue in Fairport. So, thanks, sponsors. Now it's time for a show.
Welcome back, everyone, to an all-new Comedy at the Carlson Cast. Get more information at carlsoncast.com. Today's special guests, it's Mark, Skippy Price, and Comedy Wario. That's supposed to be Warrior. Somebody's getting fired today. Joe Cash now, everybody. Now with your special host, the mother of dragons, breaker of diets, and first and hopefully last of his name, it's Mr. Vinny Paulino, everybody.
Wow, that was an awful lot.
Oreo, Amway.
I get those things confused. Warios, Oreos, come on.
If you're listening to the podcast, there was a typo.
That's correct. Hello, you know. Thank you for listening or watching today. I really appreciate you tuning in. We've got an interesting episode. Not every day we have a sitcom star, legendary sitcom star. Big time show, Family Ties, back in the 80s, ended in, what year did it end, Brian? You were, 42 when it ended?
89.
You were in your 40s, you watched it?
Yeah. Did you ever even see it, or were you still in it?
Never seen an episode, swear to God. Yeah. I tried to watch, a little bit, but I didn't understand it in context.
It was great.
I think Brian, that's the thing. It's a beloved show.
Oh, of course.
It was fantastic.
Yeah, I think Brian and I were the only two people to watch it, in context.
All right.
It was like the tone of MASH, but a family sitcom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a bunch of alcoholics playing tricks on each other.
It just was occasionally very serious. It was very good.
Didn't they kill off the dad on that show? Is that the show they killed the father off on?
I don't think so.
No,
I don't think so.
Okay.
No, I don't think anybody died. Well,
maybe now that does sound familiar. Now that he said it, but I don't
know. Tom Hanks was the alcoholic uncle. That's literally the only thing I remember about the
Tom show. Hanks was on the show.
Yeah.
But this is when you could afford Tom Hanks.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. It was 1985.
Those halcyon days of 1985.
Yep. Right now, Bill Gates can't even afford Tom Hanks, which is pretty amazing.
No.
So, that being said, Skippy Price will be here. We'll talk to him a little bit about life after that type of stardom and, how stand-ups changed it for him and what he's been doing on the road. And he's been performing for a very long time. He's a veteran, so should be interesting. And Waka Waka, speaking of veterans... Comedy Warrior
Segway
Scooters. Joe Cashnow is going to be here.
Yeah.
Now, man lost a leg fighting for his country, came back to America, was the star of a documentary called Comedy Warriors. If you've never seen it, if you have Amazon Prime, I think you'd watch it for free right now.
Yeah.
It's available. But basically what they did was they had a contest where I think it was BJ Novak, Bob Saget, Lewis Black, a bunch of pretty well-known comics, each coached a wounded warrior how to do stand-up. Mm-hmm. And Joe got matched with friend of the club, Bob Saget. So it's an interesting story there. And we're going to learn a little bit about how, laughter and being able to laugh about a really tough situation has changed this guy's life. So I'm looking forward to talking to him. But before we do, I need to talk to you folks at home, you Rochester folks. If you think you're funny, I have to bring this up because it's exciting. Show my computer screen, would you, Cam? The 2019 Funniest Person in Rochester contest is officially open for sign-up. All you have to do is visit carlsoncast.com and click on that big old banner and then just go down, scroll down, and... read all that stuff and then just fill out a little entry form and you will have an opportunity to vie for $1,000 in cash and paid work here at Comedy at the Carlson performing. Last year, our winner came off of the couch and won 3 months into comedy.
Yeah.
3 months into comedy, Cindy Arena, and she won the whole thing. It's incredible. It's a great time.
And she's like working now.
She's working her butt off. Yeah.
That's happened a couple of times, right? That's happened. It's definitely been open to newcomers to swoop in and take the crown. I think that's not.
I love it though.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's better than Game of Thrones. You don't have to stab the dragon queen.
And we do have a dragon this year. We rented a dragon.
Turn off his mic, Cam. Turn off his mic. Just get rid of him.
That didn't land nearly as well as I thought it would.
Yeah. God, I wish I could just land a punch on your chin.
You'd have to stretch and you won't do it.
Yeah, I know. I get pull muscles. So sign up, 2019 Funniest Person Rochester Contest. We want you to participate. I'll be your host again this year. So visit carlsoncast.com for more information. Like I said, click the banner at the top. Now, we're going to take a quick little break and we're going to be right back with Mark Skippy Price. So stay tuned. Hey, everybody, thanks for tuning in to another Comedy at the Carlson Cast. We've got big shows coming up starting next week here at Comedy at the Carlson. We have Mark Normand, May 30th through June 1st, followed up by Mr. Dan Soder, June 6th through the 8th. Sky Sands will be here one night only in the Rickles Room, June 8th. Jim Florentine returns, June 13th through the 15th. Jamie Lissau also returns June 20th through the 22nd. Nicole Byer making her Comedy at the Carlson debut July 11th through July 13th. Mike Dammer will be here July 18th through the 20th. Pat McGann, July 25th through the 27th. Chris Jones, one night only, July 27th in the Rickles Room. Bobby Collins, comedy legend, August 2nd and 3rd. Thea Vidal, August 15th through the 17th. And isn't this a nice surprise? Ron Funches will be here September 5th through the 7th. Harlan Williams will be showing up September 12th through the 14th. And Tim Meadows, SNL alum, September 19th through the 21st. And our good friend Vicky Barbalak will be back November 21st through the 23rd. Man, things are getting interesting going into the fall. We're in the spring. We're going to go through the summer. But, man, I'll tell you, we got a lot of awesome shows happening. So check out carlsoncomedy.com or call 5854-COMEDY for tickets. See you. Oh, hello. Welcome back to the show.
Hello there. I didn't see you there.
Me without any makeup. Hey, we're back. We are back. Joining us in studio, folks, he is a veteran. He is a comedian. He is one of the stars of Comedy Wars. You can check it out right now. It's on Amazon Prime. It's available wherever streaming videos are streamed from. Lakes, rivers. I don't know how that works. Joe Cash now. Here he is, folks.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us today, Joe.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Now, is this your first time to Rochester?
It's my second, but second my first time actually getting to see anything of the town.
Okay.
Last time I was here was for a work training program. I didn't get to do too much.
Right on. Yeah. And so this weekend, you're still working, though.
But it's a different job, so it's a lot more fun, a lot more relaxed.
It's a more fun, relaxed job.
Yeah.
So where to begin? How long have you been doing comedy now?
I got into stand-up for the documentary, so it would have been January 2012 was my first show.
Right. So now you're 7 years in, which is pretty interesting. You're playing big clubs. You're doing some interesting things. You're touring with Mark Price a little bit. I think that's cool. But I have to ask you, sir, when they tagged you for this documentary, before this documentary happened, did you want to do stand-up? Was that something that was ever in your brain?
I had wanted to do stand-up. When I was first retiring from the military, I thought about trying at that point to make a career out of it. And I thought about it for about... I'd say a good 90 seconds.
Okay.
When I realized that I had a job lined up with the government that had a guaranteed paycheck versus the hundreds of dollars a year you can make as a comedian.
Did you say hundreds?
Hundreds, yes.
Wow.
Brian, you
who
could
books that?
Yeah, no, Brian. Brian, you have a chance, pal.
I have one gig in February that pays me $500 to speak at a medical school, so that's my hundreds of dollars a year.
Yeah.
But I figured I would give comedy a miss and go for providing for my family. And then I got an email about this documentary that they're looking for veterans who are injured and who are funny that want to do stand up.
Mm-hmm.
They're working on making a documentary and having us mentor mentored by A-list comedians. We got to work with Louis Black, Bob Saget, Zach Galifianakis, BJ Novak. It was a really exciting project. And since then, I've decided that comedy is absolutely where I want to be.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So you get tapped for this documentary. They explain to you that you're going to be mentored, which, I mean, that's amazing in itself. That's very rarefied air. It's a phrase I like to use around here. Like, there's not a lot of times where you could just get into comedy where, like, Louis Black and Zach Galifianakis are like, let me tell you how to fix that joke.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was a very, very unique experience. They told us we were going to be working with writers, which I was really excited about because mm-hmm. I had very, very little material. Mm-hmm. And then they called me and said, okay, we're going to go do a show in February. And I said, well, we haven't even met my writer yet. They said, yeah, we just want to see what you have. I don't think we're on the same page.
We're going to be working with writers eventually.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So I learned to write really quickly.
So when that first time you go to the stage in the documentary is the first time you ever actually go on stage to do stand-up?
No, in the documentary, that was actually the third time I was on stage.
Okay.
When I was at the Laugh Factory.
Okay. Because I was going to say, you weren't too bad for just starting out, you know? Right. I mean, like, that first time stepping on a stage is very nerve-wracking for anybody.
Oh, absolutely. It was absolutely terrifying the first time I went up.
Well, I mean, you've dealt with some terrifying things in your life.
I realized that no matter how bad it would get, the audience was very unlikely to shoot back.
Yeah, they're rarely armed.
So I'm much more comfortable now than I used to be.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I like the rarely armed part.
Yeah.
Rarely armed. They will throw things.
That's all right. Yeah, I can shoot back, so it's fine.
Oh. So when you first start, obviously, you were wounded.
Yes.
You have a prosthetic leg, and you've made that part of your act, which I think is pretty great.
Yes.
And I mean, it's a pretty obvious thing when you come up on stage, you make it a point to play with it. When you first kind of started writing this act, and you know you're going to be in a documentary like that, did you feel a lot of pressure to, like, confront that in a funny way, or did it come naturally to confront it?
I found that you have to confront it in a funny way because I go on stage in shorts, because you can't tell one-legged jokes in pants. They don't work. People just look at you like you're an ass.
That's why they never go over, Brian.
Yeah. It's shorts. Tough.
Must be hard when you're doing gigs in North Dakota.
It sucks.
Yeah.
Actually, I did a gig outside of Albany in November while it was snowing. It was wonderful.
Oh, God.
Loved it. That was back when I was still smoking, so I had to go outside four times a day or four times an hour, whatever it was. It was a lot.
Sure.
But I found that I had to address it right away. I had to explain it and make the audience comfortable with it. And all of us in the documentary, we found a different way of addressing the obvious injury right away.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby Henlein, the burn survivor, walks mm-hmm. out and just stares at the audience for a good 20 seconds and then just says, "You should see the other guy," which is beautiful.
A hell of an opener.
It's an amazing opener is what he's got. But there's a lot of different ways that I use to address the leg right away and make people comfortable with it and show them that if I'm going to be laughing at it, it's okay for them too as well.
Can you expound upon this for me? When you say make them comfortable with it, how do you feel people are uncomfortable?
I don't particularly know how they're uncomfortable. I know that people are often uncomfortable with others with disabilities. It's just it's something different, and different is weird and different is strange, and that's what I guess makes people uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like other people being uncomfortable makes you in turn feel uncomfortable?
No. The more awkward they get, the happier I am.
I love it. That's why you're a comedian.
Absolutely.
That's it.
My brother-in-law, he tries to laugh at my material, but he always feels bad. Because I can't laugh at an amputee who's telling me, like, it's fine. This is good stuff. You should laugh.
But, right.
Yeah.
So he's not invited to my show. But other than that.
Forget him. Buy a ticket, dude. Exactly. That's what I tell him. So, you know, 7 years into this now, you're obviously doing pretty well. You're going around. What, from where you started, like, when you have this great advice and you're working with some of the best in the business under their wing and they're giving you a head start. Once that process is over and the documentary is over, what does stand-up look like to you at that point? I mean, after you go through like an intensive, awesome experience like that, and now you're facing the world of stand-up, which we all, the folks who listen to this show, you know, they hear enough horror stories from us and other people. Yeah. No, it's not an easy world. How do you, I mean, where do you go from there?
Well, I mean, my goal is to be able to be a touring comic.
Uh-huh.
I would love to be able to go around the country and bring my show to a bunch of different places. And that's just pretty much what I'm focused on trying to move towards.
Okay. So, like, how do you feel the mentoring that you got really prepared you? Like, I mean, was it material wise? Did they teach you like stage mechanics? Like, what do you think some of the valuable lessons you got were?
Certainly, there were a couple of one punchline in particular that I was given by a writer that really moved one of my jokes from reasonably good to absolutely killer.
Right.
And it was when you make an audience laugh, that's a rush, and that's rewarding and what's the word?
Gratifying.
Yeah, that wasn't what I was looking for. Not empowering, but it makes you feel good and it gives you that boost. But when you're doing a show and there's one person in the audience and it's Bob Saget and you know he's been doing stand-up for his whole life,
right,
and he laughs, that's
gold.
It's pretty impressive and it made you feel really good.
Yeah, comics don't generally laugh at each other. Do you find that
to
be true?
No, they don't. I find that most of the, you know, I could do a lot of open mics at home in Maryland, and especially when the audience is mostly comics, they just sit there and they go, nice. They smile.
Yeah.
They go, that's good.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
That's good. I see what you did there. Yeah. Well done. I'm not going to laugh because I don't do that.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. It's not an arrogance. It's more of like a professional, like we turn into professional observers when people do comedy.
We'll laugh at each other off stage.
Sure, but when you're on stage, we're just sitting there critiquing.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
We're a bunch of jerks.
We are.
We really are an awful bunch of people.
Yeah.
So you have this amazing documentary. How has that helped you? Has it helped you get work?
Oh, it's been an incredible, pardon the pun, leg up. No, it really has.
I wish I had a horn. I wish I had one of those horns right now.
I was out in L.A. I was there for a medical appointment, staying at a hotel right across the street from UCLA, and this guy walks by me and he goes, oh, my God, I saw you on TV last night, which was really shocking because we were still on Showtime at the time. But it's the opportunities that I've had through the document. I opened for Lewis Black in 2014.
Wow.
2 years into stand-up. That does not happen.
Yeah, no.
But I opened for him because he saw my performance when I performed for him for the documentary, and he said, I want to give this guy a chance to perform in front of a live audience in a theater.
Wow.
Which was an incredible opportunity, and I was still thrilled to have been able to experience it.
He seems like a very nice man.
He really is. He's very kind. They all were really very giving of themselves and really, really very cool, very approachable. Like Bob Saget may be one of the nicest people I've ever had the pleasure of meeting. He's incredibly kind and genuine, really filthy.
Yeah, they wouldn't
let me
hear the green
room. You don't
get
dirtier than him, but hysterical.
Yeah,
and just wonderful people.
How would you describe your comedy? Like, how would you describe it? Like on a rating style, would you say you're more of a PG-13, an R guy? What's going on with you on stage?
I would probably say that I'm rated R, not too dirty, but there are occasional fucks and
what shows you have in life.
Yeah.
Occasionally.
If you're lucky.
But I don't do too much just dirty comedy. That's not really my style.
Sure. Sure. All right. Well, I guess I have to ask you, what are you working on now? Like, what are the next steps? I know you're working on being a touring comic. You got any other big things coming up?
Mark and I are working... lucky enough to be able to feature for Mark Price. So we've got mm-hmm. shows this year. We're in Ohio, Indiana, Michigan, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We're going to be in Colorado in, I think, October. So we've got a bunch of things happening. We've got Texas in September. And so that's, you know, keeping me busy right now, and getting more shows set up is the goal. But
do you keep in touch with the other cast members of the show, of the documentary?
I'd say Bobby Henline and I are probably the closest of, or I'm the closest with Bobby than I sure. am with anybody else out of the documentary. He and I just did a show together 2 weeks ago in Estes Park in Colorado, raising money for veteran organizations. And we do try and perform together. We've got we're in Colorado again in October, and next year in with Mark as well in mm-hmm. North Carolina in February.
I'd actually really like to see you two perform together. I think that'd be an amazing show.
It's really a lot of fun when Bobby and I get to work together. It's and like I always say about that guy, when Bobby's on stage, he's on fire.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you so
much.
I'm
also going to tell Shoeless Joe to go find me Skippy. Go get me Skippy, Joe.
Thank you so much.
No, hang tight for a minute. I'm just telling him to get ready. But I just got to say, man, I really appreciate what you do. Sincere compliments. I feel like anybody who can laugh about the hard stuff will always be my hero.
You can cry about it. And those are pretty much the only choices that I had. And I decided laughing about it was probably the healthier one to go with.
Definitely.
I don't know if doctors would agree.
Doctors don't appreciate my sense of humor. I've gotten so many psych referrals. It's just not funny.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Because of joking around?
Because of joking around. When I first came home, both bones had been severed, and my foot was still attached, but it was really only attached by soft tissue.
Oh, God.
So when people would come into the hospital room to see me for the first time, the very first thing I would do is pick up my leg and make my foot wiggle at them, which I got to tell you, hurt like hell every time.
You were committed to that joke.
Well, I was committed to the joke, and I was also committed to my little button that had the Demerol. That was a good friend of mine.
But Demerol was a pal.
Demerol. Have you ever been to like a beer brewery or a whiskey distillery?
Never heard of any such a thing. Of course, yes, sir.
But when you go through and you complete the tour, they give you a shot of whiskey at the end of it. Well, I was very disappointed when I went to the Demerol factory. I'll just put it that way. They don't give you nothing.
They give you nothing. All right, my friend. We got Mark Price coming in now. Thank you so much, and we'll see you this week. And there's four more shows. There's two tonight, two tomorrow.
Two more shows. One tonight and one tomorrow.
Yep. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Tonight at 8 and tomorrow at 8.
This is what happens when we're off for 2 weeks.
I know.
I just screw up everything. Thank you again, Joe. We appreciate
you. Thank you so much.
So just a reminder, everybody, if you're still tuning in this weekend, you have 5 more days to sign up for the Funniest Person in Rochester contest. Visit carlsoncast.com for that. You can check out my computer screen right there. Just a reminder, I'm really pitching this hard today because we want you guys to be a part of it. There he is, ladies and gentlemen. You don't need him. Don't need him at all. Come on in. Mark Price, ladies and gentlemen. There he is. He looks beautiful.
There we go.
Look at him. You might want to move that mic up to you.
Make sure I look skinny enough. I've done this before. I know how this works.
Oh, I know you have. You're a pro. You're a producer, actor. You know everything, man. You've been doing this. We're going to screw it all up. You're going to give us advice by the time we're done with this. So I have to ask you a question out of the gate. Because Shoeless Joe, one of our producers, and I were talking. You just were over at the Brother Wee show, and you showed a picture of Steven Tyler taking a dump on a toilet on the street.
Hold on a second. Did you just call Joe?
Shoeless Joe.
Our Shoeless Joe.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought you were calling...
Our producer, Shoeless Joe.
I thought you were referring to...
No.
I thought they were being
no,
rude
no.
to Joe.
Oh, Shoeless God, Joe. No.
That would never be his nickname. We'd call him One Shoe Joe.
One Shoe Joe.
One Shoe Joe, but...
He likes to say he's... defooted but not defeated.
Yeah.
And I think that's very inspirational. Yes, slow clap.
Put it on a poster.
I told him the name is Book.
So what's up with this picture? We need to know. Steven Tyler.
Okay, so he lives in my neighborhood.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Imagine that I live in a hood with Steven Tyler, but I'm not friends with him or anything. We don't hang out. I wish, because right. he's the greatest rock star. But I have friends that are in the neighborhood that do hang out. And right. I guess somebody threw out a toilet, and he decided to make a photo op, and that's what that picture is.
You got the picture there, Joe? Put it up to the camera so everybody can see it, so know what we're talking about. But yeah, that blew my mind, and we were arguing. I was like, "That's a homeless guy. That's not Steven Tyler." And I just needed to find out from you.
Well, homeless guy is kind of his motif, in general.
You can knock him all you want. People knock him. I'm telling you,
no
he
knocking.
Walks in.
Go right up.
I have you know seen him. We have our country store, our little local store.
Yeah.
And when he walks in, he has an aura and an energy about him that is rock star. 100%.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
100%. Mick Jagger, rock star.
Yeah, well, I mean, I read their book a long, long time ago, and when he was, like, a teenager, he used to dress like Mick Jagger and would hope girls would think it was him, and he'd put on a fake British accent and walk around Boston.
It's not a bad gig.
I mean,
I had a friend that pretended he was Billy Joel in college and got away with it a couple times.
How does that work?
He went to a club. He looked a little like Billy Joel. His friends played it up. Oh, we've got Billy Joel here tonight. Can you help us get in with the thing? And they got in and whatever.
You're kidding me.
I know. It's pretty crazy. Right?
That's amazing.
God, the 80s were crazy.
Before the internet.
Yeah, it was before the internet. It was before the 9/11. It was, you could get, yeah, remember? I mean, you don't remember. You're a millennial, aren't you?
Me? No. I'm a little older than millennial. I'm in my going to be 37, so I'm a little...
Technically, you are a millennial. You don't even know that yet.
No, I'm not. I'm like Generation Y.
No, I think, honestly, you go check that out, and they maybe...
I'm Googling it. Don't put that on me.
No, I did a show recently about millennials and Generation Xers, and I searched it out, and here's what it is. It technically started in 83. When were you born?
82!
Okay, but they rounded it to 80.
How do you round 2 years?
They did. They just
pushed it. Who rounds 2 years?
Rounding doesn't matter how many. It's to the nearest 10.
You're so angry about this.
Why? Because I don't want to be a part of that crew.
Why don't you just accept your people? Just embrace your heritage, Vinny.
That's what I'm saying.
Why don't you settle down, Peepaw? Okay?
Your roots.
He's part of the greatest generation,
go
they
check
say.
Out your roots.
Yeah, I'm part of the greatest generation.
They call it that, but... Come on.
I'm very firm.
No, it is the greatest. The greatest generation was the greatest generation. I'll tell you. That is
accurate. That is true. That is true.
I'm firmly a Gen Xer.
Yeah, you're firmly something.
Gen Xers like to complain about millennials. You know, we
and not do anything about it.
Well, but we like to complain that they complain too much.
Yeah, we gave you Nirvana. That was enough. We're
done
now.
That's not a bad point. Okay, so I just looked this up. The millennial age range is roughly 18 to 35 today. Millennials were born between 1982 and 2002 as well.
I heard they rounded it to 80.
Okay, well.
But you were born in...
82, so I don't like any of this.
So you are on the cusp.
I got a problem with all of this.
You're on the cusp.
Let's see if you're a millennial.
Okay, go ahead.
Do you whine about not being able to pay back student loans, having to live in your parents' basement, and that the earth is screwed up beyond recognition and now you can't have kids?
Paid up. I own property. And
your generation
my
y.
wife just doesn't want to bang me, so I don't know.
you're Generation Y.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. Thank you. I feel a lot better.
I tell millennials, I wish I could live in my parents' basement.
Oh, yeah.
The people who live there now would be pissed.
That's pretty good. I like that one. So where'd you meet Joe?
Joe and I have a mutual friend who's been my friend forever, one of my great, great friends.
Uh-huh.
And she produced the movie that Joe's in. She's one of the producers of Comedy Warriors Healing Through Humor. So she told me about it, and she told me about him. You know, a couple of the guys from the movie are full-time comedians now. Not all of them, but Joe, and I don't know if you mentioned Bobby Henline is really funny.
Yeah.
And we're doing some shows, all of us together, coming up. And then sometimes Joe and I are just a duo.
I love it. It's always nice to see a touring show like that because there's always chemistry.
Unbrave next to him. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
The man, you know, lost his leg defending our country. I cut my finger yesterday making a pot pipe out of a Coke can. Right.
So are you gonna open for him now? Is that how that's going to work?
I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm honored to be a part of it with him. You know, comedians are kind of like a brotherhood. As the veterans have their brotherhood, you know? Yeah. So we're crossing over now and joining each other's brotherhoods. I like it.
That's pretty cool.
I was in the Air Force for 9 years, but I don't consider myself anywhere in the range of those guys. You know, I sat in an office for 9 years. You know, it's not the same thing.
Well, we appreciate your service, too.
It wasn't much.
But, yeah, but no, honestly, though, it's true. Yeah. I do appreciate that. But, yeah, the guys that were in combat, we were talking today, a lot of vets were in combat. You don't think of it that way. You think every vet was there.
There's a difference. You know, there's a veteran and a combat veteran are two totally different things, in my mind anyway. Yeah.
I was in the Army on family ties. Does that count?
Skippy joined the Army. Yeah,
they were gonna make that like a spinoff. They were talking about doing a Gomer Pyle thing.
Really?
Yeah.
Any chance I could bring that back now? I'm pretty sure I'd watch that.
I'll be working on that this afternoon.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Yeah, we'll film it later. Skippy would be at least like a colonel by now.
You know, they did 3 spinoff attempts. He's my friend, by the way, with Nick from Family Ties, the guy who played Mallory's boyfriend.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nick.
Yeah. They did 3 spinoffs?
3. He knows I'm jealous.
That's hysterical.
3 spinoff attempts. They couldn't toss Skippy 1.
Yeah.
1 of the 3. After the first 2 didn't work, couldn't they have moved? Hey, let's try Skippy.
I find it.
Did you make somebody really mad or something?
I don't know. I don't know why. You're right. Something happened.
I mean, like, who gets 3 chances at a spinoff ever in general for anything in
the
world?
Well, he was popular. He was very popular. Yeah. The ladies
Matt
used
LeBlanc.
To. I would go out with Scott Valentine, and the ladies would look directly through me at him. Okay. Like, I was invisible. You know?
Yeah.
They're like, we're putting you on television, and we're going to live off of this, is what the network was saying to this kid.
Well, he was quite, and still is quite the looker. And his son looks just like him.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of all the cast members on Family Ties. Michael J. Fox, of course, is the man. That's the reason why I'm even sitting here.
Mm-hmm.
When we sell our shirts at the show, you know, it's a picture of Skippy and Alex, and it says, in the 80s, liberals and conservatives were friends.
It's adorable. Yeah.
And 100% of the profits go to Michael J. Fox Foundation because
And you're selling those tonight?
We do. We sell them after the show. We raise money for the foundation, and I feel like that's the least I could do. I mean, I know where my bread is buttered. I honestly believe his talent is what drove, you know, Family Ties and subsequently my career to be where it's at.
I wouldn't necessarily... I mean, I watched that religiously when I was a kid, and it was well written. Like even being like in my early teens, I could recognize like it was an extremely well written show.
We had writers from Mary Tyler Moore.
Yeah,
you know, great shows, and also Blazing Saddles. One of the writers of Blazing Saddles was.
I did not know that Mel Brooks did a couple Family Ties.
Well,
I did not know
Brooks,
that
it wasn't Mel Brooks, but Mel Brooks. Blazing Saddles was written by a group.
I know, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
And so we had some great guys, and then we had young guys too. You know, people hired out of college and stuff that sent in a spec script.
Mm-hmm.
And what was cool is back in those days, that was the system. The old guys would teach the young guys, then the young guys would become the old guys, and they teach the young guys.
Yeah, it created a lot of great writers.
But that's how the system worked. But now all young people, nobody's learning from anybody. It's all just young people, and that throws off the... I think that might be why TV isn't as good anymore.
You see why I don't want to be a millennial?
Exactly.
You get it now?
Yeah.
You get it now? So let me backtrack with you. I have a question. Before you were cast on television, before you're doing anything, did you want to act? Was acting like what you wanted to do?
Comedy, stand-up.
Stand-up is what you wanted to do.
My dad was a comedian.
I knew that, and that's what I wanted to find out. You wanted to be like your dad.
Yeah, I was a little my dad.
Yeah.
And my dad was an old-time comedian, too. He'd be 100 if he was with us today.
Right.
Wow.
And he started performing in the 20s. And he was on the radio with Fred Allen, you don't remember, in 1940.
I told you, I was born in 82. What are we doing here?
But it was the biggest radio show there was. It was him and Jack Benny were the 2 big shows. So when my dad was on, you know, how many people were listening around the country? Everybody.
Yeah,
and so
millions.
He became famous, and he was on Ed Sullivan a lot, and he worked with Lenny Bruce. They wrote together. Imagine my dad wrote with Lenny Bruce.
Wow.
And Sammy Davis Jr.
Can you fit in
friends.
The C word in there anywhere, Lenny? Let's see what we can. I think you need a couple more F-bombs, Lenny.
You know,
it's
funny you should say that, because I lost it. Before I was maybe even 19, I lost it. And I knew it was valuable, but I certainly didn't understand. Like, I wouldn't have lost it if it was today.
Sure.
But I was a kid and everything. And it was a bit that my dad had written with Lenny Bruce that Lenny Bruce sent over in the mail. And the letter that came with it said, I'm having a stenographer or a typist or whatever, you know, take dictation on this. So I have to be careful of what I say. I'll send a separate page of curse words, you know, under another cover.
That you can insert.
I'll send a page of curse words under a separate cover. That was his little note to my dad.
That would be on a frame on my wall.
Of course it should be. It should be.
That should be like in the comedy museum. That's amazing. So your dad was a comedian. That's what you wanted to do, huh?
So I followed in his footsteps. We're both poor decision makers.
Right, right.
I like to say. And when I was a baby, I remember he threw me in the pool to teach me how to swim. When it came time to ride a bike, he had me go really slow and in traffic. And that way I'd learn to deal with hecklers.
Interesting.
But honestly, he was like the coach in Rocky.
Okay.
Come on, kid. Hit him hard. Hit him hard. He didn't talk like that. But he worked with me. When I went on Merv Griffin, I was 14 years old. I went on as a stand-up. I still have the stopwatch that we used, his stopwatch. I have that. It's like when I put it in my hand, I feel.
So he coached you
I feel
up.
His energy. He coached me, and he coached me hard, too. Like, he disciplined me, you know. It was like, you know, hard, tough love kind of thing, you know.
So you...
I can't hear smiles! You know, that kind of thing.
I can't hear smiles. God, I'm going to start yelling that at him when he's on stage from the back of the room. I can't hear smiles, Bob!
That's actually what you're supposed that's what you're supposed to yell at your writers. Writers! I can't hear smiles!
How do you not have that on a t-shirt? That's like the best line I've ever heard. I'm like in love with that now. That's my new favorite. So when you start working with your dad, and obviously the man is writing jokes with legends and he's legendary himself, he make you write all your own jokes? Does he help you punch it up? Does he give you anything? Or let's tell me how this works.
All right. So honestly, he came from a different era and stuff. And, you know, in the old days, everyone told the same jokes and they told each other's jokes. And it was a lot of that. I know that seems sacrilegious to be on imagination.
We're
going to
go back and we're going to dissect that in a minute. I want to talk about that. Right. Keep going.
And so he wasn't able to install that ethic in me. And as a result, when I was 14 and 15, I was doing his jokes. I was doing Jay Leno jokes. I was just doing jokes, you know, any which way I could get them. I maybe knew better. But, you know, when you're 14, you don't always do everything that you know better. Mm-hmm. And
well, when you're 14, you're also not like exposed.
Well, you don't have anything to say yourself anyway, right? You're 14. But but anyway, a lot of the young comedians at the Comedy Store and everything, you know, fixed me up right away on how that works. And I learned my lesson. But I think that in a weird way, it helped me, because I think when you're just starting, you don't have any good material. It's hard to get cooking. If you're doing Jay Leno jokes, all of a sudden you get confidence, you know, the jokes start to work.
Yeah.
And then it's like, hey, you know, and I started working on my own anyway.
But does that set you back? At all? Does that
I was
you
14
back?
Or 15, so it didn't.
Well, hold on.
And it was a different era, too. Jay Leno called me on it. Literally, got a phone call from Jay Leno. Hey, I hear you're doing my jokes on TV. You know, and but he didn't. He wasn't like, no, I'm good. You're through in this business. He was like, come on over to the improv. I hear you're pretty good. Well, and he taught me, you know, about not doing that and welcomed me to the club.
Well, that's not what I'm asking.
That is not the way I'd react if someone was doing my jokes.
Well, I was 14.
I would imagine he would just, like, took you and stuffed you inside of his chin for a minute and said, yeah. Never want to go back in there again. Never do my joke again. No, I guess let me rephrase my question, because when you start off and you're going out and you're doing this other people's material thing, I guess what I'm asking, if it messes you up, does it stop you from developing your own voice? Does it take you longer?
I was 14. When I was 17, I started working with these brilliant writers that wrote with Gary Shandling and Howie Mandel and all that stuff. And that changed my world pretty radically.
I can imagine.
Yeah. All of a sudden I had an act. I remember my friend Steve saying, I told him, I'm working with these writers. They work with, you know, these amazing comedians. And he was like, Skiffy's going to have an act.
That's wild. So you did Merv Griffin at 14. Obviously you're doing pretty good. Is that kind of what got you the
family
part
ties,
in Family Ties?
Directly with the NBC called me in and they, by the way, that first Merv Griffin, I actually did all the jokes. Some of them were hack or joke book jokes, but there was no Jay Leno jokes on the first one.
Okay.
Because my dad did know better than that, and he trained me, and he you know, kept me on the straight and narrow. But what happened was the famous story. When you do really well on a talk show, they say to comedians, you're supposed to have three sets ready to go in case they call you back.
Right.
Right? Because that's a famous thing. They call you back. You've blown your wad. You don't have anything to do. What do you do next? Well, that happened to me. They called me back right away. They wanted me on right away. And at that point, I was cocky. I killed the first time. You know, I walked out. I pointed to the band. Merv loved me. And so now they asked me back. My dad's on the road. My dad's like in the Catskills on the road. And I'm cocky. I don't need him anymore. And so me and my 15-year-old friend prepared the set. And that's when the Jay Leno jokes went in, and that's when really awkward stuff went in, and I was very nervous, and I went out the second time, and Merv's not there. Now Dick Clark is hosting, and I became, I don't want to say I was friends with Dick Clark, but I got to work with him later, and we actually did business together, and he's a hero, but he's no Merv Griffin when it comes to hosting.
Right.
And I was a little nervous, and I remember I talked real fast, and I died. I bombed the second Merv. But fortunately, NBC only saw the first one, and so I lucked out.
Yeah, and you were already locked in.
They already had calls. And now, You're going to have to forgive me for not knowing this. Were you on the cast right away?
So the first
season. Like first season or second season did you come on?
I just did a couple of guest spots the first season.
Right. Okay.
And I did a couple of guest spots the second season, maybe a handful. And then they had a script. I remember this was the ghost of, Skippy was going to be the ghost of Christmas past in a Christmas episode.
Right.
And I was making a movie. And they had the script written and everything. And they were like, Skippy's not available. And they're like, yeah, he's making a movie. And they're like, Skippy's making a movie? Like, they were like, what the heck? And so that's when they gave me a contract and everything and made me a regular on the show. And then that
Christmas past ghost must have been a very important part on that show.
Well, they had to rewrite it and everything. And they were like, well, we don't want him to
just give him more money and a contract.
Just set him up, bring him in. And the network was for it. I guess it helped keep Michael J. Fox young and stuff like that. And so they went ahead and offered me a deal. And then I just lucked out because the very next season we were put on after Cosby. And people don't remember, but the show wasn't nearly as popular the first couple of years. The show might have been as good as it ever was the first couple of years.
Yeah, definitely.
But it wasn't really seen in mass until the third year we were on after Cosby. That's when it blew up and became number two in the ratings and all that.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Back then it was cool to follow Cosby.
Yeah, now, thank you.
Yeah.
Good night.
America's super dad turned America's super predator.
Yeah.
You think that makes it easy for me? I played an innocent character on an 80s sitcom.
You certainly did.
So people are instantly suspect now. What's Skippy's depravity? Yeah. Does he molest puppies? Girls don't even touch their drinks at the show. They're all...
So I find it really interesting that, like, stand-up was the first love. But when you start going into the acting world, like... Do you want to stay in it, or were you happy to kind of like, I just want to pursue stand-up? Like, how does this all work for
you? I enjoyed it. I've enjoyed acting. I just did a little part in a movie again for my first time in many moons.
Oh, no fool.
And, you know, they say the camera adds 10 pounds. Uh-huh. You've heard that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It turns out that not being in front of the camera for the last three decades added 50 pounds.
Right.
Maybe and they just had five cameras on you.
That's it. So yeah. that would be 50 pounds right there.
Yeah. There it is.
I can do basic math.
Yeah.
And so I was always Gen a comedian Xers in your first. I love the movies. I love the movies. Trick or Treat with Ozzy Osbourne and Gene Simmons was really
fun.
Oh,
yeah, that's right. You were in that.
I have a bad film festival behind me. And I do. I enjoy acting. I really do. And working with other great actors. Certainly the Family Ties cast was amazing.
Sure.
Know. But, yeah, if you ask Jerry Seinfeld or Jay Leno, they don't say I'm the host of The Tonight Show or I'm a sitcom star. They say I'm a stand-up comedian. That's what they are.
Yeah.
And that's what how I feel so.
Interesting. Stand-ups, that's the that's where
justification.
It's at.
Okay, I'm sorry. If I'd been a bigger movie star, that might not be the answer, right?
Yeah. Right. So you just did a movie. What was it called?
Okay, so I just did it. It's a little movie, Devil Music, and it's kind of a throwback to the, you know, the Trick or Treat was an 80s heavy metal horror movie, and so this is kind of like a throwback to that.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's fun.
I play the bad guy now. I play the monster, Satan.
You play the devil?
I kind of play the evil incarnate.
Does, when people yell Skippy at you, does it bug you?
I've grown to cope.
But it bugs you.
But Mark Ippolito, the owner of Comedy at the Carlson, when he had a mullet, they called him Ippy.
I still call him Ippy.
No, we still call him that. Yeah.
Ippy!
Yeah.
I call him Ippy, like, all the time.
I love it. Does he like it?
Nobody cares. But I care if you cared if people would yell Skippy at you.
No, I honestly enjoyed it. It's kind of like my stripper name.
Okay.
Yeah.
My rapper name? No?
Yeah, I think it's more of a rapper name than a stripper name.
Damn Skippy. I'm changing it.
Damn Skippy. I like it.
Damn Skippy, Skippy.
DJ Damn right. Skippy.
Now, you're doing these shows with Joe. You're doing a little bit of acting. I've also seen that you've produced a lot of stuff. Like, you've done a lot of, like, interesting projects behind the scenes, and a lot of it was in a really interesting genre that I'm fascinated by. You did some game show stuff.
Yes.
That's wild to me. Mm. I think game shows are kind of where it's at just because of the fact that, like, personality is the most important part. You don't have to – everything could kind of be, like, natural and funny and off the cuff. But – it seems to me that there's an insane amount of little tiny things that would go into making a game show that no one could possibly be prepared for.
I got some great tutoring and mentoring from some of the greats, too. Like, do you remember Burt Convy?
Yeah.
I do, okay. Yes.
So him and Burt Reynolds had a company, Burt and Burt Productions.
Yeah.
And they did Win, Lose, or Draw, and I was a guest on Win, Lose,
or
Draw.
Well, you hosted it, didn't you?
Well, then I went on to host Teen Win, Lose, or Draw on the Disney Channel, which was the...
Which I used to watch.
Oh.
Never watched Family Ties, but I watched... would lose or draw. Yeah,
that means your family had money, because in those days you had to pay for Disney.
We had Disney. Absolutely, we had Disney. Listen, my parents' motto.
Somebody saw that show, like, oh, your parents were doing pretty good.
My parents' motto was, if we don't have to talk to them, throw in the extra $4 a month. Whatever it was.
Good for you. I get it. Yeah. So
you probably do get it.
We had a lot of kids who were celebrities at the time on Teen Win, Lose, or Draw, because that was the idea, regular kids mixed with the celebrity kids. So Justin Timberlake was on the Mickey Mouse Club that shot that next door. And Leonardo DiCaprio at the time was on Growing Pains, and he was one of the kid guest stars.
Wasn't he? I totally forgot he was
And, you know, you got to think back. In those days, I'm 19, they're 15, they're nerdy, they're with their mom. I'm, you know, at 19, I'm
so
cooking. I got writers.
Me.
I got girlfriends. I live by myself. They have to live with their guardian. They thought I was so cool.
So you're telling me at one point, Leonardo DiCaprio,
Justin Timberlake looked at each other and went,
holy crap, man, it's Skippy.
He's got his own car.
We'd like to be like him someday. Things change. Now I'm sitting here interviewing with you.
Aww. Poor guy. Listen, man, I love you. I got to ask you this, too, because we opened this up, and one of the questions that we got yesterday via text was, basically, you hear a lot of horror stories about child stars in the 80s. You seem to come out pretty well-adjusted. How was it for you? Was there a lot of crazy things happening? I mean,
certainly, I feel lucky. A lot of the kid stars, you know, had issues and things like that. I feel very fortunate. Yeah. I went to a party. All of the ex-80s child stars were there, and it wasn't a party. It was a seance.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Many of them are dead now. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So I am very lucky. And why is that? I don't know. A few reasons. I started in show business around my dad really young. So I feel like that gave me an edge, because my dad comes from old show business. Yeah. It was very different from Hollywood and all that. And so
you don't have a drink till after the show kind of stuff.
Well, no, actually, I used to get my dad's drink before the show for him.
Got it.
Pre-9/11, the little kid could walk up to the bar and actually order a drink for his dad.
Yeah.
But I forget where we were going. I lost it completely.
We were just talking about how that prepared
you. Oh, the kid
you.
Stars. The kid stars.
Yes.
Yeah. So many of them go bad. And then the other thing was that I wasn't really the big star. I wasn't really a kid star. I was, I was Skippy. I was the neighbor. So that kept me humble, I think. I don't know. I feel bad for them when they have the issues and stuff. The kid from our show had a thing with a mugshot and all that stuff. But he's doing great. Brian Bonsall was the little kid on the show. He played Andrew.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And he's married now. He's having a baby, and he's doing great. But
that's
nice to hear. He had his adventures. What can I say? I got lucky. I don't know. My mom was a cop growing up.
So your father was a comedian and your mother was a cop.
She was a singer. They met in show business together, but she hated show business. And she hated my father. And so she ran from that world as far as possible. Literally
as far as possible.
I'd rather have people shooting at me than deal with club owners and bookers and comedians.
Been there.
And I've had those days.
Yeah. You got to remember, it was the 60s and 70s. My mom was a singer, so that wasn't the hashtag Me Too. That was hashtag Show Us Your Hoo Hoo. You know,
right.
People were not respectful to women. And
we're talking about like the 80s, the dark stuff that happened in the 80s.
No, this is
go back to the 60s, baby.
This is the Mad Men generation. Yeah,
yeah,
this was, yeah,
that's
serious.
What I'm saying.
Yeah,
I mean, go back, rewind 20 years, even more.
So, but she broke the wall and was one of the first female officers on the force and stuff. Well, actually, she climbed over the wall. Right.
Right. She's not the Kool-Aid man.
No, exactly. And I'm very proud of her. Now, when I was a kid, I was embarrassed. My friends would come over and they'd see the police uniform and the handcuffs, and I'd be like, oh, my mom's a stripper. Kind of like my mom does with me now when her friends go, your son was on network television and now he's playing at the Rochester. No, he joined ISIS.
Yeah, there it is. There it is.
My boy's a world traveler.
He's been everywhere looking for weaknesses. So you, your mom's a cop. Holy cow.
Retired now.
But I'm saying, I had no idea. That's...
But that'll
wild.
Keep you on the street narrow. I couldn't come home stoned without her knowing. She was trained.
Right,
other parents
say.
Didn't have a clue. My mom could swab my tongue and send a hair sample in before noon and get the, you know, the results back from the lab.
And that never appealed to you? You never wanted to be a cop?
No.
You just always went the stand-up route.
It was like CSI My Mommy.
Hey-o.
I never wanted to be anything but a comedian. I was going to be following in my dad's footsteps. You couldn't stop me.
Acting or not, but stand-ups were.
My mom tried. She tried. She wanted me to have a normal life so bad. She wanted me to go to Cornell and have a family. And she, you know, sometimes I'm like, I should have listened to my mother.
Yeah.
Okay. I have to ask this then. You know, you have had so many rare experiences, you know, to be able to come up with somebody who really knows the business, who a famous comedian to really show you the ropes. People like Jay Leno, who even though you stole his jokes at your own admission, still is like, come here, kid, let me help you get a leg up.
Well, he's such a nice guy.
You get to start working with writers that worked with Gary Shaley, did some of the best performers in the world.
Oh, I was around it all. I got to tell you, I hung out at the Comedy Store. I watched, you know, Sam Kinison and Jim Carrey and all those guys become famous.
Wow.
There's hardly a guy with a sitcom or a famous comedian now that I didn't get to watch back before they were famous. And it's a weird dynamic. I was misquoted in a book recently, but I'll get the quote right here for your show. It was on Family Ties, and these guys weren't yet. Jerry Seinfeld didn't have a sitcom. Jay Leno was already the most popular comedian in the country, but he wasn't the guest host of The Tonight Show.
Right.
Right? Mm. And so they were always, you know, Drew Carey was just doing spots on Tuesday nights and stuff. And these guys were, they were interested in what I had going on. You know, they wanted that, you know?
Yeah.
So I had a lot of them gravitating towards me. You know, Paul Reiser and stuff was asking me questions. And, you know, that was before he was a TV star, you know?
Or How old are you at that point?
I mean, I started on the show when I was 14, so
right.
14, 15, 16, you know.
And Drew Carey's, what, 25, 30 out of the Marines?
I don't know. I'm very bad with remembering exactly when I met who and what. But, yeah, he was from Cleveland, and he was a very popular stand-up. These guys were the greatest stand-ups.
Sure.
I see, that was the irony, is that I wanted to be them so bad.
Yeah.
And they wanted the sitcom. They actually wanted to be like me. Every other comedian, their dream is to get a sitcom. I was on a hit sitcom, and I was dreaming to work at Comedy at the Carlson.
Yeah. I'm so amazed by this story. And, it's just such a great example of what the comedy business is. Everybody wants what everybody else has.
Yeah.
I told you already, the first comedy club in Rochester, I did tell you that, right?
Yuck Yucks.
I'm getting old. No, yeah. It was, I worked at the first comedy club in Rochester, and it's pre-Yuck Yucks.
Okay.
Well, pre-Hiccups.
Okay.
Pre-The Comic Cafe, pre-The Comedy Club in Webster,
uh-huh.
Which I just found out, by the way, the show Webster was named after the city of Webster. Did you know that?
I did know that.
I graduated
from Webster High School. He handed me my diploma.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I think when I was there, I made jokes about it that I didn't even realize.
Yeah.
And the reason is because Stu Silver, who's one of the great comedy writers from that era, he was known as the script doctor. Mm-hmm. Pretty much every pilot script they sent to him, they gave him a check. He would doctor it and make it funnier. Mm-hmm. And he's from Webster.
I had no idea.
He's Googling it right now.
I'm just making sure, because I was going along with the joke, but I don't know.
Oh, you didn't know?
I didn't know. I was going along with the joke.
No,
I'm a liar.
It's real.
Webster, New York, Webster TV show.
I don't know if it's going to come up on the Google, but who told me that today? Mark did. Or Brother Weiss. Somebody told me.
Ippy told you.
No, Brother Weiss. Brother Weiss was friends with Stu Silver.
Hmm.
Okay. So here's what I'm going to Google. We're going to prove this out. Stu Silver.
See where he's from. Rochester. That's why on Webster they always made those references to the garbage plate.
Webster, where life is worth living, is what it says on the sign.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that the theme song? That's in the theme song to Webster. No, I just made it.
No, that one you had me on for a second.
Stu, okay.
I don't remember Webster. I remember that show existing. I don't remember
having I toured
ever
with Emmanuel Lewis. Manny.
Did you?
Yeah. The secret of Webster was that he was already grown up. He was my age. He's my age.
Yeah.
We were the same age. And, you know, everybody thought he was a little kid, but he was, you know.
Yeah.
He was like a grown-up, wasn't he?
Well, he was a teenager.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a great guy. And still, he produces music, and he works with all these rap stars and stuff. It's pretty funny. He's kind of like a Ice-T or something.
Good for him.
Are you finding it, Vinny?
Nope.
Because this is great. This is
insight.
Terrible podcast.
Yeah, great podcast.
Some of the best podcasts he's ever done.
Let's spend 20 minutes while you
the
Google.
The sounds of Vinny typing.
Just don't Google.
My fat fingers on the keyboard.
I don't like when
girls
Google me on a date because too much information.
You know what?
TMI.
Oh, yeah.
Here's what I've decided. I've decided that I can't find it on Google, so I'm just going to declare it a fact.
Okay. All right.
All right.
So let it be written. So let it be done.
I would have gone the other way, but...
Well, you...
Do it. You do you.
I do me.
Girls Google me on a date. They're like, you're 50? I go, don't believe everything you read on the internet.
Yeah.
I'm 26. Check my MySpace.
It says you're worth $6 million.
I am.
Believe everything.
No, it's accurate. I am worth $6 million. It's just off by $6 million.
That one's very close, though. Mark Price, thank you for coming in today, man. There's two more shows this weekend. Tonight and tomorrow, you get your tickets at carlsoncomedy.com. Call 585-4-COMEDY. We're going to be back in just a minute with the news with Ross Johnson, so stay tuned. Thank you for being awesome and watching another episode of the Carlson Cast. Don't forget we're streaming live on Facebook and YouTube every Friday morning. You could also follow us on social media on Twitter and Instagram at CarlsonCast. You can listen anytime on iTunes, Google Play, and we're now available on Spotify. You should also check out an amazing app called Laughable. And on the Laughable app, you can connect to your favorite comedians in a way you never thought you could before. Download it in the App Store and visit CarlsonCast.com for information on more shows. And don't be a jerk. Rate and review. Anytime now, we are being absolutely ridiculous in studio. Joining us today is the man who tells us, you know, about the stuff he Googled this week in the world of stand-up comedy. It's not like you keep track or anything.
I have Twitter.
All right. It's Ross Johnson. Hey, there everybody. He is. Welcome. Say hi to Ross.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. So I'm gonna start out this week on a slightly down note because we were off for a week or so, and
a lot of deaths.
Comedy deaths just keep piling up. So I'm just gonna do two of the most prominent and
everyone else.
Saddest one.
They're dead. Google it.
I mean, you don't need to sit here and we can run out. I mean, a lot of people died in the last 2 weeks. You know, you can figure it out. Sammy Shore, of course.
Pauly's dad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Pauly Shore's dad, co-founder of the Comedy Store with his wife Mitzi, who died last year, first wife. He died of natural causes. He was 92, so that's a good one.
Are you telling me that poor Pauly is an orphan now?
Poor Pauly is an orphan now.
Aww.
How old is Pauly Shore if his dad was 92? I guess he's
50-something.
Yeah, Pauly's got to be 50-something.
So he began his career doing stand-up with Shecky Green. He worked with Elvis Presley. He opened for people like Tony Orlando, Barbara Streisand, Tony Bennett, Sammy Davis Jr., Tom Jones.
Jesus.
Jesus. So, yeah.
I feel like that's an interesting bunch of shows to be on. As a performer,
that was a list of names. It was like...
Those crowds have got to be... Like, back in the day, that's what they used to do. I know a guy used to open for Diana Ross.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
he used to go out and, do stand-up in front of Diana Ross, which is nuts to me.
Totally
like,
jealous.
I would never... Yeah. I just, in my world, in my brain, going from stand-up to a music show isn't something that's really done much anymore.
I think they just expected it back then, though, so it was probably easier.
It was more of a variety-type thing. Now it's always an opening band.
I think people were more frugal. If you were going for a night out, you wanted, the whole... You wanted the whole meal laid out for you.
Well,
you
know, I actually think the venues were probably more frugal. Pay a whole band, I could get one guy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, who else is dead?
Tim Conway also is dead.
That would make me sad.
I know, and he was up there, but he was 85. He died of complications related to, he had dementia and there were some other age related things.
Did he
things
really?
Around.
Yeah.
He did, right toward the end. I don't know that it was a long period.
No, I think he was only for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. He got diagnosed a couple of years ago.
Oh my gosh, that's terrible.
But of course from the Carol Burnett Show, the famous Harvey Korman.
You ever think he walked around the home on his knees? Just walking around like dwarf?
You know what? I'm sorry, those dwarf things never stop being funny to me.
Oh my God!
They were always hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I want to do one of those Steven Crowder's, Tim Conway might have been the funniest man alive.
He might have been.
Prove me wrong.
Yeah.
Well,
dwarf holds up.
Even and he was sort of famous for the Harvey Korman stuff, where they would try to crack each other up, and that's not always funny to me when it's because sometimes it just comes off as unprofessional or this bit's not working, so we'll.
Jimmy Fallon had to win me over so hard because of the constant.
Yeah.
Cracking and smiling and laughing during sketches.
But when those two would do it, on the Carol Burnett Show, you could tell they were, going at each other to make each... You know what I mean? It was it was a duel to the death to try to make each other crack up, and it was great. I mean, it was brilliant to watch. So when they didn't, you were wow, good for you guys. And when
it
they
turns
did,
out
like,
that even though Tim Conway has passed away, he still won. Because didn't Harvey Korman die, a long time ago?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, that was...
He was also the voice of Barnacle Boy on SpongeBob SquarePants.
What?
Yeah.
I forgot about that. I didn't know that. I saw that.
Yep.
You're right.
Now I'm more upset.
Well,
so no more Barnacle Boy.
Cam's in a cry today.
Oh.
All right. What else we got, pal?
Artie Lang. This is another not great news while we're gone.
Artie Lang dead.
Is he working at a gas station?
Artie Lang was working at a gas station. That would have been the good news. The bad news is he got arrested for violating terms of his drug court probation. Apparently, so working at the gas station, and then he was also picking up garbage, which he was Instagramming about as like, hey, look, I can put in a good day's work and blah, blah, blah. And it seemed very nice and inspirational, except that it led to getting arrested. The details were not released, but he broke the terms of his drug court program, and he's back in jail, apparently. So.
Oh, man.
No, it sucks.
You think Howard mentioned him in that new book?
I think he did. And Artie had nice things to say about the book, which was surprising. But
really? Well, no, it's not. Because well, I think Artie has really trashed Stern at all. Well, maybe he has, but... Like, he's always says, every time I've ever heard him interview, that he's incredibly grateful for the opportunity and stuff like that. Like, I think he's nosy. A little too close.
A bit on the nose.
A little too on the nose. I'm just looking at the picture of it.
Thank you. I was like, how do I say on the nose without saying nose again? Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
He just seemed like a real grateful guy for it, and he knows he messed up.
Yeah, so I think everybody loves Artie, and we wish him the best, and I don't know, good for him. I hope things work out.
Me too.
I guess it's just Artie Lang. It's just Artie Lang all over the place. Cat Williams got some Cat Williams.
Yes.
Oh, now we got it.
Minor Cat Williams update. Don't get too excited, but he was on the latest episode of Jemele Hill is Unbothered. During which, you remember a little while back, I don't remember which particular episode we talked about this particular bit of Cat Williams news, but he had missed a recent court date.
I do recall this in Florida.
Yeah, so he missed that court date. He now says that he says that there were people on his team who had embezzled $59 million from, I assume, his...
What kind of mental state are you in that you 59 million goes missing and you have?
It takes you a minute to notice.
Yeah, He spent it on jackets. They must have stolen it. He had retreated into the food court.
He was in the food emporium. So he now claims, and I'm not saying claims in a dismissive way. I'm sure
he was running around doing everything he was doing. I think a lot of people like he'll never notice.
Yeah, I mean,
which is wrong. That's stealing.
If I were working for Cat Williams, I might take a few bucks out of the till too. I don't know.
I'd take a couple cool those jackets. They never fit me.
But so as a corollary to that, he said in this Jemele Hill podcast that he had started to go after the people on his team that had embezzled the money, and in retaliation, they did not tell him about his court date. I love him. I don't know how plausible
that's a
any
good
of this
story.
Sounds to me, but
God.
So you think it went? Hey, there's $59 million missing. When am I supposed to be in court again? And they're like,
that's sort of what I picture. I'm not sure.
And which one of your employees is in charge of all your money
and
your
court
dates?
Guess a lawyer.
Jesus. I'm also not sure how, because supposedly this was in retaliation, so I'm not sure how long you go between, hey, I'm pretty sure that guy embezzled $59 million and I'm going to get him, and then that person is still, the person in charge of telling you when to go to court. So it seems weird to me, but again, Catwell, he's living on another level that I can't begin to comprehend, so...
Yeah.
It's Cat Williams' world, and we don't want to be in it.
Absolutely. I don't know.
We're all just along for the ride. I want to make him, I don't know. I want to put him, just somewhere prominent.
You think if we gave him an honorary award, he'd come? Well, he misses court dates. He's not going to come to the podcast, probably.
Greatest comedian of all time.
He also lost $59 million without noticing right away, so I feel like there's probably not a lot of financial incentive you could offer.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that the invitation will probably fall through the cracks because everybody's still mad at him that works for him.
Yeah.
Like, he's never going to get this award. They just rip it up. Thinks he's getting his $59 million back in this award. No, thank you.
Damn it, he lost the Carlson Cast Podcast Award.
That'll teach him.
We spoke a couple weeks back. Moving on, we spoke a couple weeks back about the Conan O'Brien joke theft lawsuit. Oh, yeah. This was the guy.
This is the where the staff writer was taking people's intellectual property off of social media,
but wasn't.
Well, allegedly. So there's one guy, Robert Alex Caseberg, who accused the lawsuit was against Conan, his producers, and TBS, claiming they stole four jokes from his, I believe, his Twitter feed. Conan O'Brien has settled that lawsuit this week, so it was due to go to trial at the end of the month. Conan O'Brien settled it just a couple days ago. His statement was essentially saying that, look, this is ridiculous, but it's going to be a lot more ridiculous, and it's going to cost just as much money if we go to court and do all that, so we'll settle it. It's fine. He basically, you know, his statement was essentially that when there's topical jokes, people make the same kind of jokes all the time. Right. We don't know who this guy is.
In the comedy world, that's called parallel development.
Yeah, yeah. I wake up every morning. It's one of the first things I do, and I watch all the clips on YouTube of the shows.
And then he starts fashioning his act.
And they're always copying each other. You know, Seth Meyers will do the same joke that, you know, Stephen Colbert did or whatever. It's just, it's a topical thing. People are going to bump up the same joke.
Yeah, and he gave a couple of examples of exactly that, where, like, in the statement he made, he sort of mentioned, you know, here are a couple of instances where all three of the late night hosts or whatever made pretty much the exact same joke because it was a topical thing and blah, blah, blah. So,
interesting. There's no guilty plea. There's no one who's guilty. They settled it because it's cheaper than dealing with actual going to court.
There was absolutely no admission of guilt. Right. Sure.
Correct. Yeah. And there was no information on how much money we were talking about. But, I mean, if you wrote four jokes on Twitter, and I think whatever money you get from that is probably pretty good, I would think. So,
if you gave someone a dollar for their four jokes on Twitter, you overpaid.
Yeah, I've never gotten a penny for a Twitter joke. Right. So.
And you don't deserve one.
I'll start my bidding at 50 cents for
but
my
I will
Twitter
say,
jokes.
Taking people's intellectual property off of Twitter or Facebook, naughty, naughty.
Not good. Yeah, not good.
Naughty, naughty.
I don't know. You know, I can't say for sure whether or not this was a case of that. I think it sounds like it was probably not.
Yeah.
However, it does happen, and it's bad.
It's naughty, naughty.
Yeah.
All right, what else we got? One more story?
Okay, so wrapping up, we got one more story, and this is a quick one. So, of course, Jordan Peele has been doing very well with the Twilight Zone and Us. And
Yes, he has.
You know, so...
Get out.
I don't know if this is related to that, but in the world of comedians getting into the horror genre, Chris Rock is collaborating with Lionsgate on a new Saw movie.
It's called Tambourine.
Really weird. That seemed really weird. It's called
Tambourine. No, sorry, that was mean to say. That was not the best special I've ever seen.
People trapped inside of a room forced to listen to a special.
Oh,
you have no microphone. Shut up.
Cam says, maybe I'll just start repeating what Cam says. Cam, you just yell your jokes and I'll just repeat them for the air.
I'll fire
you both.
That's
how much I love you.
So what is he doing?
So he's doing a new Saw movie. I've seen it
it's
described
like a spin-off.
As
he's starring in it.
He is that's unclear.
Producing.
He is he's basically got the idea and he's producing it. I don't know. It's not clear at this point if he's writing it. But he's got the he's producing it and he's presented the this is my idea, this is my vision for what the ninth Saw movie will be. And
it's called Seesaw. It's about a playground.
It's just entirely
it's kids. Way happier than the other eight.
Two kids just trapped on a seesaw having a good time.
Yeah.
It's a prequel.
With one kid's head just down on the bottom underneath one of them. Two kids.
If you want to get down.
If you want to get down, someone's going to die. Oh, wow. I'd watch that.
Yeah, I'd watch that. So
Chris Rock, you're a genius.
Yeah. So, of course, Saw is one of the highest grossing horror movie franchises of all time. And,
yeah, well, there's
Chris
eight
Rock's
of them.
Getting, getting in on some of that sweet Saw money. So good for him.
Good for you, Chris Rock. Okay, I guess that is the end of this week's show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Don't forget to subscribe. Visit carlsoncast.com for all of your links. Check out our great sponsors. And most importantly, come see a show here at Comedy at the Carlson. You won't regret it. We'll see you folks next time. Take it easy.